Welcome to another edition from Gulf Coast to Space Coast. My name is Mike Webb. I'm the managing broker at the Clearwater, Florida office. Today, we are very lucky and privileged to have a special guest with us today. Bernardo Piccolo from Marvel Insurance is going to give us an update on what's going on in the world of insurance. How you doing, Bernardo?
Doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me.
What's going on in the market?
A lot going on. We had had a fun year in 2022. We had companies going belly up. We had the hurricane. I think you heard about it, right?
Yeah, that little storm that blew through.
Yeah,
I heard about that.
Minor problems on that one. We have some law changes. We have some requirement changes. Just a ton of stuff we can talk about that should help our agents get through closing, save some deals, save some money, hopefully, or prevent some headaches, one of the two.
Absolutely. I think that's what we're all looking for, is preventing the headaches as much as we can. So I did, just as a backup of a second, I did read today, I believe, I saw that Ian was the costliest storm in Florida's history, and it's the third most costliest ever in the United States. So I'm sure that's got to be infecting the insurance industry.
It really is. All the issues we're going through right now are not 100% related to Ian necessarily. We had a blow before that, which was related to all the fraud and roof replacements and so on. But Ian was basically, you know, the last shoe to drop in 2022. So the magnitude of the storm, the cost of the claims, the time that it's going to take to get them back on their feet down there, inflation on top of replacement of these properties is just a perfect storm, really.
Yeah, the inflation is going on, and we're feeling it in our wallet in the terms of higher premiums going out. I don't know about you, but my insurance almost doubled last year.
That's actually something we're seeing quite a bit. Sometimes doubling is not the limit. We've seen things tripling.
Oh, goodness.
You know, there's different ways to look at it. I look at it, if an insurance company is actually getting to the point where they're tripling your insurance cost, they really don't want you. That's a sign that they're trying to give you, saying, go find something else.
Yeah. If you're going to stay, we'll charge you this much.
Exactly. If you're willing to stay, it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you have to stay with them because they're still the only viable or best option out there. But most cases, we're able to reshop it and move somewhere else, even though we're in a market that is very limited now. So, you know, on the entry level stuff, you know, the $300,000 to $600,000 replacement, most people are ending up going back to Citizens or going to Citizens from a premium standpoint. Number one, and then number two, sometimes there's no other options. So there's going to be probably another year or two of a lot of that happening, in an effort to balance the shock of these premium increases. And then also the lack of companies willing to ride on the private market.
Yeah, it seems like they just don't want to be in the state of Florida. Some of these companies are making a business decision to just get out of the state.
Yeah. Well, we have, and I'm sorry all the attorneys that are listening to this, but we have two major problems in Florida, right? We have hurricanes and we have attorneys going after insurance companies for valid things. And then sometimes not so valid, sometimes exaggerating claims.
Is that part of the crisis that you feel is the litigation, the fact that Florida has so much real estate litigation, insurance litigation?
It's a big deal. And me and you were catching up about that maybe a week or so ago.
Mm-hmm, right.
I never expected to hear that. I think it was 78 or 79% of all the
78% of all the real estate related lawsuits are originating in the state of Florida.
Yeah, and I think insurance, I think, was either 79 or 77 or whatever, but it was all the litigation through all the country is in Florida. That's insane. You know, and then compound, you have Ian hitting us or any other hurricanes.
Right.
I mean, it's just who would want to write insurance in Florida?
I don't know. Now, they just addressed some of this, I believe, in Tallahassee. Do you have, I heard something where they can't go back now more than 2 years. Is that anything you're familiar with? What's going
Correct.
On with that?
Correct. There was some changes that were done. And then politicians, again, they're always, they may have our interest in mind. But the solutions are not usually the best.
they're made for us sometimes.
So they may have attacked the problem from the back end of it instead of the front end, but that's a matter of opinion. But there's some changes that were made limiting the time that you can file claims. Right. The idea behind that was to try to obviously lower the payout. And usually, statistically speaking, the older claims are usually more related to fraud than the ones that are early on, meaning if there is a flood, you call the insurance company the day of or the next day,
right,
not 368 days away.
Right.
So that's the kind of the idea behind it, was to try to keep things more in line and close to the actual event. So what they did is they changed the deadline to report a claim from 2 years to a year. Now, on the few situations where the actual insured did not realize that they had a valid claim into, you know, let's say 13 months,
right,
that's going to affect them. But that's honestly a pretty rare situation. Usually when you have a loss, you know it right away or fairly soon.
Right.
So that's one of the big ones. Now, the ones that I think are going to really impact us in an adverse way are going to be requirements placed on us as the consumers in relation to getting coverage to citizens, who happens to be the biggest insurer in the state now.
The insurer of last resort, I hear them counting all the time.
Yeah, but now it's becoming the first insurer that you go to and the only one you may be able to go to for a lot of people. So there's different, different requirements that you have to fulfill in order to get insurance through them. They were either increased or new ones created. A good example of it is it used to be back a while, you know, maybe 5-7 years ago, that in order to get to go to Citizens, you had to be saving. You have to be, the replacement policy had to be 10% higher than what Citizens was before you could choose Citizens. Meaning if you were getting a $1,000 policy through the private market in order to go to Citizens, Citizens had to be at least 10% cheaper, right?
Okay.
So it had to be $899, for example.
Okay.
Now that requirement went to 15% and now it's going to 20%. So that means that if me and you have a policy that now costs $3,000 with Citizens, we may have to pay all the way up to $3,600 with a private carrier before we're allowed to go to Citizens.
Even go to Citizens.
Yeah. So basically, on the end of the day, you have a 20% surcharge that you have to go beyond that in order to be able to save money and go to Citizens.
So why would anybody stay on that higher policy rather than going back to the Citizens? It makes no sense, does it?
It doesn't, but on the end of the day, the private market has different lines of coverages that are offered that Citizens does not, different limits. So liability through Citizens, which is a very important part of the policy that most people don't realize, through Citizens, there's a limit of $100,000, where the ideal number is 300. That's what you usually like to see on a homeowner's policy.
Okay.
300,000 of liability coverage.
So you're talking about like somebody invited over, I guess, slips and falls, something like that? Is that what that would cover?
That's part of it. The most important part of liability, aside from something happening on the property itself, is let's say you go and do you play sports at all?
I do. I did when I was young enough to handle sports.
Okay. So what did you play?
I played football.
Okay, so let's say you started playing football this weekend with me, and you broke my leg in the process, right?
I wouldn't do that to you, Brandon.
Yeah, I know.
Not on purpose.
But let's say that I am friends with one of our favorite attorneys that we see in all the billboards, and after I left the hospital, I'm having a drink with this attorney friend of mine, and he's like, well, why don't we go after Mike for a couple hundred grand for breaking your leg, right? So homeowners' liability would take care of that issue as well.
Okay.
So, like, if you and your wife went out and hurt someone outside of the home, doing something that there's no insurance for it. So, like, if you're driving and you hit someone, that's car insurance.
Right.
If you're taking your friends out on the boat, that's boat insurance. But if you're playing sports or if you're running somebody over in the public parking lot with a cart, there's no insurance for that. So your homeowner's liability covers that.
I bet most people don't know about that, but the attorneys do, don't they?
They do. And, you know, in a state now where the average home price is, what, over $400,000?
$400,000 is about the average price.
Having $100,000 in liability doesn't sound like much.
Doesn't got to go very far,
no.
Is it?
No. And then, you know, in other situations, if you have an umbrella policy, let's say, you know, your underlying policy, which is homeowners, would have to have $300,000 in order for you to qualify for an umbrella policy. So that poses another expense if you were to go from private market policy, having $300,000 in liability. Now you're going to Citizens to save some money, but you still have to get the liability in order to qualify for your umbrella. Now we're buying a second policy. So there's a lot of moving parts to it to figure out if it's better to save a little bit of money and go to Citizens or stay where you are at 20 or 25% higher.
So what are you advising most people to do in that situation? Is it just based on a case by case?
It's a case by case, and you got to take 10 minutes a year and look at your policy and call someone that knows what they're doing to help you figure it out. So, you know, you should call your agent and say, hey, let's do a quick review of my policy just to make sure I'm still where I need to be. Most policies are paid by our mortgage companies.
Right.
And most people think that because they're paid by the mortgage company is looking at it and making sure that you're getting the proper coverage. And that's not the case. So
That's not going to be the case at all, I wouldn't think, in most cases. They just want to make sure their asset is protected.
Exactly.
Mortgage company.
And you know, going back to what we were saying earlier, there's, you know, this 50%, 75%, 100% increases. You know, if your policy renews on January 1st and your lender pays for it and you go all the way up into November of that same year before you figure out that your policy tripled, you're already spent, you know, the entire policy basically. There is no canceling and money, getting money back because it went up so much.
Uh-huh.
So that has to be addressed, you know, before it renews or shortly thereafter so you're not basically spending $5,000 when you're supposed to spend $1,500.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, this is not something you should sleep on. You should be reviewing your policy regularly.
Regularly, every year. And if you don't know when your policy renews, some people don't. Some people just don't get the paperwork on the mail. They sometimes do a,
e-filing where they everything's set up online.
Yeah, like sometimes the insurance companies will set you up on an online emailing type of scenario.
Okay.
And you change emails now for the last 4 or 5 years, you haven't been getting your policy altogether. So first way to figure out when does your policy is going to renew, it's usually looking back on the date that you bought the house. And most of the time, that's the trigger date, right? But if you can figure that out, call your mortgage company and say, hey, I lost my insurance. Can you give me at least the name of the company or the agency or something like that?
Right.
And they should be able to provide you that information so you can look into it.
That's great information. And let's take a quick break to hear some words from our sponsors.
Good so far. You guys good?
I don't know. How are you?
You okay?
How are you going? Blah, 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 blah. Too much blah, blah, blah? Or
no? No, you're good.
Okay.
And then maybe at the end, just add like a summary of some of the changes that have happened.
That's on here.
That's on
there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. And then count to three and go.
All right. So we are back with Bernardo Piccolo from Marvel Insurance. So what's going on with the new flood requirements?
Oh, that's going to be fun. So they're up into about a month ago, there were no requirements that tied a homeowner's policy to a flood policy.
Right.
So if you have your house paid in full and there's no lenders involved telling you what coverage to have or not have, you could opt to have in homeowners only. You could opt to have in flood only. You could decide to not have any insurance at all. Starting on April 1st, so 2 days ago, any policies that go to Citizens they are in a flood zone where flood insurance would be required normally by a lender, now have to carry flood insurance. So if you have a loan and you go into Citizens, you're already carrying flood insurance anyways because your lender is requiring you to do so.
Right.
Now, grandma that just moved down here from Boston, let's say, and paid her house cash,
mm-hmm.
she was expecting to get down here and spend $3,000 in insurance a year, not $6,000. Her home is older. She's close to the beach. Citizens is the only market. Now, when she calls and tries to get that policy, she's going to have the great news that she's now required to carry flood insurance in order to qualify for her Citizens policy.
Did that come down from the state level, or that was some of the recent changes?
That came down from the state level. I'm sure it came down from the federal level from a standpoint of trying to fund FEMA a little better for mm-hmm. flood, but it was part of the mix within the state level and the reforms and laws that passed.
So, yeah, quick little side note here. Do you find a lot of real estate agents or potential homeowners get confused with their flood zone and their evacuation zone?
That is a big, big deal. Yes, yes.
Yes, yes.
So there's they have nothing to do with each other.
I know.
And then another misconception is a lot of people think that you have to be close to water to be in a flood zone, where we have a lot of agents in Orlando. They are on the middle of the state, so they're definitely far from tidal water and sometimes miles away from a lake, and they're on the flood zone. So, I mean, that has nothing to do with it. Right. So the best way to think of flood insurance is has to do with elevation 100% of the time, not right. distance to water. And, you know, in relation to homeowners, sorry, I forgot where we were going with it.
No, that's okay. Between the a flood zone and the evacuation right, zones. Right. Yeah.
All right. So basically going back to your original question, evacuation zone has to do with distance to the coast, where flood insurance or flood zones have to do with elevation.
Right. And where I find a lot of it happened to my wife and I personally, we live very close to the coast and we are in a evacuation zone. But because it's new construction, we don't have a flood requirement because the elevation is there being met to the current standard.
Yeah, so the builder basically filled in to raise the slab of the homes outside
right,
of the flood.
Right. So another FEMA question. I know many years back, I understood for the first time, FEMA was talking about really having to drastically raise their rates. Because they're subsidized by some of our federal agencies here. Do you right. have any insight on that?
So
we might have something looming out there that could potentially be a big problem.
So FEMA is subsidizing the flood insurance program, right?
Right.
And the flood insurance program is managed locally by different insurance companies.
Okay.
So you get a private insurance company, and the private insurance company will offer flood insurance to their clients that is basically a federal flood insurance program. The only thing they do is manage the, you know, premiums,
the account,
and policies and mailings and things like that. But when the claim actually happens, the money comes from FEMA to pay for it.
Okay.
So There is. I mean, this is a conversation that we can go on for hours. But on a nutshell, there was a reform that was done to FEMA's flood program due to the overwhelming amount of losses we've been having. And what they're trying to do is either increase the amount of policies being written to be able to take a little bit of the pressure off the system itself, or they're going to have to raise premiums drastically in order to pay claims without us again writing a check to endorse, you know, from the back end.
Right.
Most of the drastic changes have already happened. I did get a letter in the mail the other day, which was very surprising. We don't usually get any of the good news in the mail, but one of our clients in Indian Rocks Beach received a 20% cut on her insurance. Because Indian Rocks Beach got recertified or re-approved by FEMA as a city that is complying with the flood guidelines.
Oh, well, so that's good news.
Yeah. So what could happen to, you know, in our coast, most cities are going to comply to it and try to keep that, because as soon as they're not part of it, they lose the subsidy. It gets pulled out, and the premiums just shoot through the roof.
Shoot right up.
But, yeah, I mean, right now, I think most of our changes are related to homeowners. At least the scary ones are going to be more homeowners related than flood.
Okay.
Flood should be something we can probably take a break from.
Getting stable, hopefully. Yeah. Okay. So are there any new inspection requirements going on with Citizens or any of the private insurers that you're
working okay,
with?
So from the Citizen standpoint of it, four-point inspections are necessary and required on anything that is 25 years or older.
Okay.
That has been the norm for a while now.
Right.
What we're seeing is on the private market, some companies are adhering to that rule and types of insurance that did not require an inspection previously. So condo policies were usually not, there was no four point requirements for a condo policy, for an HO6 policy.
Okay.
On the last 6 to 12 months, we've been seeing that, first of all, the market for those type of policies have shrunk quite a bit. And then the few companies that are writing it are now requiring a 4 point on a condo, which is something that was not true 6 or 9 months ago. So when getting a contract on a condo and getting your inspections done, we now have to basically get a 4 point on a condo in order to qualify for insurance, or at least to qualify for all the options available if there are more than if there's other companies other than Citizens.
So is that a 4 point? Is that something that the building itself would have a master 4 point on that we could get? Or hopefully we don't have to go out individually. Let's just say there's a building that's got 100 units in it. Does everybody got to go out and get the whole building 4 point inspected?
That's the problem. A lot of the things that are listed on the 4 point are general to the building itself, not the unit. However, the insurance company wants to see a 4 point for the unit, right?
Okay.
So the home inspector is going to do a 4 point with the electrical, the plumbing, the roof, most likely it will be the general roof for the building, and the air conditioning for the unit itself.
Okay.
So they're not really looking beyond the walls of the unit.
Okay.
Okay. The problem, though, is there are units that are tied into a plumbing system that is not acceptable for coverage purposes.
Okay.
So now you have a brand new water heater, you have a brand new panel, brand new air conditioning on your unit, and that brand new water heater is tied into a type of plumbing that the insurance company would say no to. So now you don't qualify for insurance because of that.
So they can't write any unit in that building at that point.
Pretty much.
And it has to.
Yeah, we ran into that situation about a week ago. We had a building from 1975, which would normally be cast iron.
Right.
Probably not cast iron, but most likely PVC and copper. At some point in the mid-90s, there was a major problem on the plumbing system, and it got replumbed with polybutylene pipe, which has been a type of plumbing that is not acceptable to any insurance companies.
Right.
So the new requirement kicks in. Buyers get an inspection done. They get the 4 point because they know they need that to the insurance.
Right.
And then the poly pipe shows on the condo. So the entire unit had copper, but the copper is actually, you know, tying into a poly pipe system on the entire building. So that was a really trick one. We ended up having to go to Citizens because Citizens doesn't require the 4 point for condos yet.
Okay. So we ended up going, option.
Yeah, we ended up going there because of that. But the buyer is now aware that they may not qualify for insurance in the future. And then the building now is aware that they may have to replumb the building one more time because of that.
So that's really some information that's useful for people looking long-term in the condo investment, and this is something that you should really investigate.
For For sure. Yeah,
to see if you might have some serious special assessments coming down the pipe in these buildings and with everything else that's going on with condo ownership. So citizens, possible assessments, loss of coverage, we got anything on that?
Possible assessments, there's been a change on the how much it can be assessed. I mean, it used to be roughly 15%. Now that can go all the way up to 45%. So if you have a, going back to that $1,000 policy, again, that doesn't exist, but you know, we'll use a round number for sake of what we're saying.
For easy math for us.
So if you had a $1,000 policy, it could be assessed, you know, $150. Now you're looking at $450 being the case. Likelihood of that happening without a major storm, somewhat slim, but if we do have another major storm and if citizens keep taking over every policy in Florida, then it's going to be a big deal.
What percentage, if do you know, that Citizens is writing right now?
It's over 60, I think.
Is it in the state?
Yeah.
That's pretty significant.
And I think we went up from low 30s in the last 12 months. I mean, it's a huge jump.
So they almost doubled their policies in the last pretty 12 much. Months with all the insurance companies leaving the state. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, there's some that not just left the state, they left.
They left business
they left.
Altogether. Okay.
They probably evaporated.
Thankfully, before somebody went to get their claim.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you this question because we hear it a lot in our business. Trying to get a policy, trying to close a transaction. What about the house might need a roof? Buyer can't afford the roof right now. Seller's not going to put it on. Do you offer or do you know of any companies out there offering, you know, the short-term fix? Maybe a 30-day policy after closing. A new buyer can go get a roof put on and then you rewrite it.
There is a concept out there that people say that there are things that are uninsurable. That's not true. Everything's insurable. If you have a building that is on fire and you want to get insurance for that building on fire, you can. However, it's going to cost you, right?
That's right.
So there's always a solution. The problem is how much is the solution going to cost, right? So assuming that we can get regular coverage at $2,000, if we go to a company where the 4-point is not required, so we have an issue with the roof and we have to get this coverage to get through closing, what we normally see is about somewhere about 100% more for that Band-Aid policy.
Okay. And how long would that, what would be the minimum on a Band-Aid policy?
90 days.
Okay.
There's minimum time frames on the policy and then there's minimum earn on the policy. Meaning if you get a policy that is $2,000 again, the insurance company may say the first 25% of that premium is non-refundable. So if you're getting a loan, right, if you're getting a mortgage, the lender is going to require a 12-month policy by definition.
Right.
So when you get that temporary 12-month policy, you can count that you probably should use the first 90 days of it because you're not going to get a refund
anyways. Because you're
paying for it. Right. So there's no rush of getting that roof replaced within the first week because you're going to end up paying for that 90 days anyways.
So that $2,000 policy now is $6,000.
Likely to go to $5,600.
And you're going to not be refunded 25%, so $1,500 you might as well use it. So is that a service that Marvel offers?
We do offer that. We do help people with those type of situations quite often. We try to find alternatives to it just so we're not wasting and burning people's money for no reason.
Right.
But sometimes if that's the only way to do it, we do it and we'll be able to help them with that.
All right. Well, let's talk about what you see coming down the pipe that might be positive for us. We've talked about the doom and gloom. Can we talk about some of the good things coming forward? Can any way to help our homeowners out there save money? Any tips you have?
Yes, there's some positive things that we can talk about, even though it's insurance. So I think the first thing really is making sure you're on top of it, making sure you're reviewing your policies at least once a year. At that point, Getting a wind mitigation a lot of times is going to save people a lot of money.
Okay.
Okay. So
get a wind mitt.
Get a wind mitt. So we get usually when we help people get their policies, we don't run into that because we're staying on top of it from that day forward. But when we're talking to people that are coming from different agencies or sometimes different from the company direct, they had a policy for 10 years and never really looked at it again and replaced their roof, put impact windows, did all kinds of stuff, and never really got the proper credits for it. So it's a good idea to review those and then look for credits, where they may be. From a positive spin on the market of insurance, it's going to be hard. Hard to come up with something there. I think as we're trying to keep the lawsuits down, and we're trying to make litigation a little bit harder in Florida, that may alter the direction we were going, but it's not going to be on the short-term basis.
So what we're hoping for here is just to stave off the increases with this new legislation that came down and
correct.
Maybe taper off where we're at.
Correct. And I think as more people go to Citizens, which is kind of the trend, they'll have to reinvent a way to make Citizens work for us.
That's a concept, government working for you.
Yeah, well, we can try. We can hope for it, right?
That's all we can hope for.
So, and I mean, there's a lot of changes related to roof replacement and so on. That's going to take a little bit of the pressure of the private market. And I think we'll get some of the carriers coming back to us once they see that the storm has passed on that sense. But it again, it's not going to be overnight.
Yeah, that would be great to get some competition back in the state, some carriers here. So, as a quick note, what as you being the insurance agent that you are, when you see a roof that is blank years old, 18, 17, where's the cutoff that you go? That's a 17-year-old roof. We're not going to be able to write it. It's an 18. Where's your number there?
That's a great question. That goes back to one of the items we wanted to discuss earlier and a question earlier that we didn't bring it up. Citizens and most of the insurance carriers were looking for 3 years of life expectancy. That is now changing to 5.
Okay.
So that's going to be a hurdle to mm-hmm. a lot of people. There's a little bit of, there's a give or take that is coming into play on repairs. Which they were very strict about partial repairs. Now there is some guidelines on giving us some guidance and lenience on, okay, so if part of the roof is bad, but the rest of it is good, you can repair. And the number is up to 25% before it really becomes a serious problem. So let's say you have a roof that is, I don't know, 10 years old, mm-hmm. and you have palm trees on the side of the house that is brushing through the side, and, you know, 10% of your roof is really bad. The rest of it is in great condition. You can easily fix that 10% and show proof to the insurance company, and then you got a 10-year-old roof that technically okay. should have another 10 years of life left.
Good.
There's a little bit more clear guidance on that sense today than there was maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah, it seemed to be a little all over the board as far as like I said, I was always dealing with the 3 years left expectancy. And you get a home inspection. The home inspector says, you know, nearing the end of its life. Right. And then maybe you can get a licensed roofer themselves out there. And is that if they will put a statement together for you saying it has X amount of life?
Yeah, if the home inspector is not comfortable calling the life expectancy for lack of experience or, you know, doesn't want to be exposed to liability in that sense.
Right.
A roofer would be the ideal person to make the call. On that sense, the best way to handle it is to have the home inspector state that, you know, they don't know. And then we can get a roofer to go out and certify the roof through a form that is sort of kind of like the 4-point, but it's the roof only. It's a roof certification form. So the roofer will go and will say, well, yeah, I think it will have 5 years of life and, you know, pretty much sign off on the roof at that point. The age difference, though, or the life expectancy does vary from carrier to carrier.
Okay.
So going back to Citizens again, 3, maybe going to 5, most carriers were looking at roofs that exceeded, I think, 12 and 14 were the common numbers. So if you had a roof that was 12 years old, some carriers would say yes to it, some wouldn't. You know, in a state where we're trying to make roofers, our roofs are getting better and better, where you can buy a 50-year roof now.
Right.
Well, in 20 years, you're done. So
yeah,
it's...
Yeah. There's a lot of discretion involved into the inspectors as to what they're certifying and what they're not. So to retrace that... Roofing or roofer certification form, is that something agents could get from you?
That would be something they have to get it from a licensed roofer.
The roofer would have it. Okay.
The roofer would be, they can get the form from us. We can provide the blank form for sure.
But they have to get a roofer to fill it out.
But they'll have to get a roofer to fill it up and certify it.
So, yeah, most roofers I know would like that form, in their hand form on the job.
Course,
so maybe a little tip to the agents out there is – you know, make sure if you've got a situation like that, call Marvel, call Bernardo, get your form, and then meet your roofer out there and see if you can't get them to certify that's got 5 years of life left.
And then, you know, we have classes that we do here at Rothenburg quite often.
We got one coming up.
Coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Bernardo is going to be here giving us a class. Yeah.
And we kind of go into detail about all the requirements, all the things to watch for when you're showing property so you're not writing the contract on the wrong property. I mean, you know, there's buyers, there's properties, and sometimes they may look like they match, but they don't. So we're going to try to help you figure out, you know, the hurdles you may have to jump through with the buyer. And try to eliminate
investigatory work prior to putting them in the house and realizing that the roof is 18 years old and we've got issues and we can't afford it.
Or prior to even to spending $500 in inspection on a house that you can eliminate from the get-go. I mean, that's
our job as the realtor.
Exactly.
Keep it together. Okay, so I'm going to give you the last minute so you can wrap this up and we'll move it on down.
So... we're here to serve you guys. We're here to answer questions. If we can help you and if we can write policies for you, that'd be great as well. If you're out in the field and you see something you have never encountered and you have some questions, you want some guidance on how to address the problem, how to get insurance, how to get the premiums down, give us a call. And, you know, we'll do everything we can to make you and your client happy.
Oh, we love that. And Bernardo, I will tell you, you are Johnny on the spot. I can tell you agents out there, if you need to give the Marvel a call and get an answer, Bernardo is the one to call. And we're not pitching your services. I'm just telling you, I've been doing this a long time and dealing with a lot of different insurance agencies over the years. And we really appreciate you here. So with that, guys, that's going to wrap up this week's edition from Gulf Coast to Space Coast. We will see you next time.
This is a Charles Ruttenberg Realty podcast from Gulf Coast to Space Coast. This podcast is sponsored by Integrity Title and Guarantee Agency LLC, where integrity is guaranteed.